You're listening to the Refined Hippie Podcast. I am your host, Rebecca Henson, and this is episode one. I am super, super stoked. I've wanted to do a podcast for almost a year now. I just think it's a really great medium to explore different topics. And unlike blogging or YouTube channels, I mean, you can listen to a podcast in the car, you can listen to it while you work. And it's just more personal to me. I'm going to have different guests on, hopefully every episode. I might do some of just me talking about different things, different subjects. But for right now, I have quite a few amazing guests lined up. But before I get to that, I just wanted to say for anybody who is not familiar with my website, therefinedhippie.com, or Instagram, at therefinedhippie, then you might not know what I'm all about. So I was just going to share a little bit of what to expect, right? So I am a big advocate of holistic living. What is holistic living? So to me, holistic living is nurturing your whole body. So your whole being, I guess, your body, mind, spirit. So you're not just your body, right? You're also your mind and your soul, if that's what you want to call it, soul, spirit, whatever. And so I think it also means having an open mind and heart and embracing growth. So I try to practice and live life as holistically as I can. So whether that means just being more compassionate to other people, animals, all of these things, I'm plant-based, and just being conscious about your choices and how they affect you, how they affect the planet. That's what I am about, I guess. The Refined Hippie, the name, comes from, I've been calling myself this for at least like 4 or 5 years now, and it was just kind of like a slow progression, and I think it came from people just being surprised when they found out I did certain things. I've been making kombucha for years. I surf. I do a lot of things that are not what people would expect when they look at me. And yes, I absolutely think of myself as a modern day hippie. I'm not all about, free love and I bathe, but, a lot of their fundamental core values, I am all for. I am absolutely an environmentalist. I love the planet. I try to make very conscious choices of what I do every day and how they affect the planet. I am totally a tree hugger. Whenever I pass by a really nice tree, I cannot contain myself, and I'm always blurting out like, what a beautiful tree. Oh my gosh, that tree is so pretty. So yeah, I'm a tree hugger. And of course, I'm an animal lover. I am a vegan, plant-based vegan, and for lots of different reasons. For my health, it helped heal me of an autoimmune disease I had years ago. And it also helped heal my mind and my spirit, just knowing that I am trying to cause as little harm in the world as I can. So with that, yes, I am a refined hippie. I don't look like it if you see me on the street. So that's what the refined hippie is. And that is what to expect with this podcast. And I am super excited about my first guest. So my first guest is my really good friend, Maggie Greiner from The Kind Kitchen. Maggie is also an advocate of plant-based living. And she is also a vegan chef and a veganic gardener. So she took veganism and plant-based living to a whole new level. She grows her own vegetables. And while she doesn't grow all of her foods, she's not completely self-sustainable, she is working her way there. She tries to live a conscious and sustainable life, making choices that align with her values. So without further ado, here is my interview with Maggie Greiner. Hi, Maggie.
Hello, Rebecca. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for being on my first episode of my podcast.
Congratulations.
I know. It's kind of freaky. I don't know why.
So fun.
It's so fun. I was on your podcast, which was really fun, but I don't know why. Doing it yourself, it's a little bit more pressure. I don't know, but I'll get over it. So we're doing it. I'm doing it.
You're a natural.
Thanks. I don't know about that, but
we had so much amazing feedback from our last conversation. I really truly thought that your mom and my mom would be the only listeners.
I know,
listeners.
And I was fine with that because
there were a few more and some really great feedback. And if one person other than our moms listens, that was a success.
That was a success, absolutely. Yeah. So hopefully this one will be just as good.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe two people.
Yeah. Oh gosh. So for those who are listening, if you hear any background noise, it could be that we're having a very large storm in Charleston, South Carolina right now, actually on the whole southeast coast, I think. So they say. Right now it's just kind of windy, but there is a tornado watch. So I don't know. Maggie didn't have any idea that anything was happening when I came over. So
it's not that bad. It's not a hurricane.
I know. And it's going to be over soon, but it's probably going to get kind of windy.
It'll be relaxing background music.
Exactly. It's kind of soothing, you know, and we're inside and it's kind of dark in here, which is actually kind of nice. And
the mood is set.
The mood is set to talk about plants. And for anybody who has not listened to Maggie's podcast, which I was on, you should listen to it. It's the Kind Kitchen podcast with Rebecca Henson, obviously. But we talk about at the beginning how Maggie and I met. But like I said, if you haven't listened to that, then I'm just going to briefly chat about that. So Maggie and I have been friends for over a year now. And we were set up by Maggie's mom and my aunt on a blind friend date. And the rest is history.
The rest is history. The only successful blind friend date that I've ever been on.
Maybe has ever existed. No, I'm sure that's not true. But that I've ever been on, for sure. So I guess there are multiple reasons why they set us up. One, because we're pretty much the same age,
right?
So that makes sense. But they also know that we're both plant-based and vegan, I guess. Your mom knows that, obviously. So yes. I guess that was...
They knew
they
your
somehow
story.
Started talking about...
Yes, my mom knew your story and how you healed yourself of an autoimmune disease and through a plant-based diet. And my mom knows how passionate I am about nutrition and wellness. And so she thought it would be a match made in heaven, and she was right. And then our husbands met.
I know.
And
they hit it off.
They hit it off. So now we have regular couples get together.
Supper parties, brunches at Gnome.
Yes.
Our favorite vegan restaurant here in Charleston.
Went there today.
Oh, I'm jealous. Dang it. I went to Harbinger, but it was good too. But they didn't have a lot of, they have a lot of salads and stuff there. Some of them were vegetarian and not vegan. So.
Well, that's okay.
So I got a sweet treat instead. And then I felt a little guilt from getting my sweet treat that I said I wasn't going to have any treats for at least a week, and that has been squashed, but it's okay.
It's all right. It's about balance.
I know. It's about balance. So I'm just going to get right into it. We're talking about plant-based, and obviously you're a plant-based vegan. You took it to an even larger plant level in that you also grow your own plants. So you took it to the next level of being a vegan.
I try.
I am aspiring to be that, but at this point I have a basil and a mint tree that are not tree, but mint plant. And my mint already looks kind of sad. So I don't know what I do wrong. So how did you get into plant-based nutrition? It was kind of slow, yeah. Slow progression?
Yes, very, very slow. I've been interested in nutrition for Gosh, really since college. I minored in nutrition in college.
But how did you, that was just like, what was your, did you go into college with that as being
no,
what you wanted
no,
to
do? No, okay. Well. So I grew up in a very rural, yeah. I can never say that word.
Rural, I know
rural
it's hard to say.
Area, rural area in Kentucky. You grew up in South Carolina, but, you know, in the country and.
Small town.
So as any child of the 90s did, I grew up on a lot of convenience food and fast food. And I was active enough with golf and other sports that I maintained my weight through high school. Mm-hmm. But my freshman year of college, I gained 20 pounds.
Well. Freshman 20.
The first year, yes. Freshman 20. So I played on the golf team at the University of Alabama, and that was a very stressful first year, and I drowned my stress in with all of my other friends and teammates.
I know.
With, you know, terrible light beer and, you know, Guthrie's. There was in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, there's a... It was the equivalent to KFC. Actually, it's way better than KFC, called Guthrie's,
yeah.
And probably ate fried chicken at least two or three times a week.
What?
Yes. So, and, you know, just all of the above. Binging
and
on
late
ice
night
cream
eating.
On the weekend. Yes,
that was
exactly.
My thing.
Late night
yeah,
eating.
That was the worst.
And so, yeah, my sophomore year, I decided to randomly enroll in a nutrition class, and I fell in love with the teacher. She was amazing, and the basic message was eating more vegetables, which was great.
Wow, and she was even pushing that. That's great.
Yes, so yeah. I thankfully on my sophomore year I moved into a one bedroom apartment, so I was able to grocery shop and make my own food.
Nobody would eat it.
Yes, exactly. I wasn't eating in cafeterias all the time. And so long story short, my nutrition interest started in college. And then throughout my 20s, I continued to research nutrition and I became very interested in paleo at a certain point. And, you know, was eating a lot of animal products. But it, you know, it worked. I think Atkins is maybe what I had, you know, called it at the time.
Did you get into that because I know you had said one time you did like CrossFit and stuff. Was it because of that got you into that kind of
CrossFit,
eating?
Because
I feel like
CrossFit
that encouraged
lifestyle them. Definitely introduced me to paleo. You know, I went to Weight Watchers on and off for a long time, even in high school. I actually remember going to Weight Watchers with my mom, and so it was all about weight maintenance and my outer physical appearance and the number on the scale. It was really what my 20s nutrition experience was all about, and you know, I called it a yo-yo dieting. Was like a typical week would be to, you know, Monday you just start off, everything's gonna be strict and I'm gonna go to CrossFit and I'm gonna eat, you know, chicken breasts and broccoli and then that keeps up for a couple days, and then you know, Thursday through Sunday I'm eating, you know, the Southern Burger at Coleman Public House and drinking IPA and
truffle fries.
Truffle fries. So, but I was able to maintain my weight. So I'm, you know, and also I was in my 20s. So
yeah, everything's easier when you're
that's forgiven.
When you're in your 20s. It's true. I never believed that until I actually was over the age of 20 something. But it's true.
It is true. So it wasn't until in my 30s when the love of my life, Ben, and I got married in 2015, and that same year, his dad, my father-in-law, went through a stem cell transplant for his lymphoma.
Wow.
And a stem cell transplant is a huge deal. It is the most intense form of chemotherapy that you can imagine.
So it's like,
it's a total body reset. Oh. Most people, I believe, I don't know the exact statistic, but I believe that most people that need a stem cell transplant do not survive. Like there's 60% do not survive.
Oh my gosh.
And so, but if it works, then the hope is you'll be in remission the rest of your life. And you know, all prayers still to him. He's in remission now and doing great. And, but yeah, that was a really hard time for him, and a time where we wanted to be as supportive as possible. And, but my, you know, my experience was that it transitioned me basically from my 20s being focused on my outer physical physical appearance and how that related to my dietary choices, and then, you know, transitioned me into this phase of life where I realized that the most important thing is our...
What's going on inside?
Yeah, our longevity.
Yeah, totally.
And for our families and for, you know, and just having gotten married, you know, I want my husband and myself to have a long, healthy relationship. And, you know, so it was born out of a question of, you know, are these chronic diseases that we're seeing that are so prevalent in the U.S. right now, are these chronic diseases a Grim Reaper scenario where this, you know, guy in a black cloak just comes in and stamps you with some kind of cancer or heart disease?
And there's nothing you can do about it.
There's nothing you can do, and you don't know where it came from. Or was it slowly building over time and due to lifestyle, and therefore that being something that you can control? These are the questions that started to pop into my head.
Mm-hmm. And from there, like, did you were doing research about it, or like, I mean, you were questioning it. So were you actively searching like online about, you know, a different life? What was the optimal like lifestyle, or how did you find
the like, question? The questions were, and the experience laid the groundwork for being open and receptive to, you know, to a next layer in, you know, my health journey. And we just happened to, Ben and I happened to watch Forks Over Knives documentary.
One of the best ones.
I believe, I'm not sure what year it came out.
I feel like it was around then, because I think I watched it around then as well.
I think you're right. Mm-hmm. But, you know, it's, for those that are listening, it's still extremely relevant.
Oh, absolutely.
I highly recommend watching that if you have not. But yeah, we watched that documentary, and I think we actually watched it twice.
I need to watch it again. It's been super long.
It's so good. It's so There's good. So many incredible plant-based doctors in that documentary that I have continued to follow, and I know you have.
And these doctors have spent their lives, like decades, studying what is the best diet. It's not just like one small study, you know?
Right. The China study with T. Colin Campbell, who's featured in the film, you know, was his life's work.
Mm-hmm. And 25 years or something on this, I think 25 or 26, just on that one study. Mm-hmm. So it's not, you know, some of these studies come out saying like, oh, you know, bacon's not so bad for you. And it's just a small like study that, you know, was like 6 months long. And, you know, it's just not a clear picture of what really happens when you're eating, you know, certain foods.
Right. Right. Yeah. Exactly.
I think it's just like ways for people to justify their eating habits, you know, if they see these certain studies, they're like, oh, see, I can eat bacon every weekend and I'm going to be fine. No.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying that it's 100% that something terrible is going to happen to you, but your odds are going to be elevated. So if you can lessen your, you know, the probability of you getting heart disease or lymphoma, then why would you not want to do that, you know?
It's really hard though, you know, because you're bombarded with marketing you know, I mean, Time Magazine released Butter is Back a couple years ago.
Oh my gosh.
You know, and like you're saying, that was based on one study, and from all the research that I've done in the podcasts I've listened to that have really played it out, is like that study had a lot of loopholes.
And well, a lot of times if you look really closely into that study, it could be funded by a front group for the butter industry or the dairy industry or whatever, you know, there's loopholes either with funding, or there's loopholes with, you know, the different factors that they, I can't even think of the terms that they use for studies right now, but yeah, it doesn't add up when you really investigate.
It doesn't, but hopefully, I think our generation's in a good, well, our generation's in a fortunate position, because we're being, and actually, you know, I think of my sisters. I have four sisters that are in their early to mid 20s, and I think of them being raised, you know, on the internet, really, and in this open source era where they, and I think to some extent our generation is, you know, not putting up with non-transparency anymore. And that's my hope for the future, is that, you know, because the one great thing about social media and the internet is that it's creating this atmosphere where we're just not tolerating non-transparency anymore. And I think that's a great thing for everyone, even though it feels like there's a lot of, you know, misinformation, and there definitely is a lot of misinformation and diet wars and these things. Mm-hmm. There is ultimately healthy and moving us towards, you know, a greater transparency in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm. I think we've lost a lot of trust because we've seen it over and over, just like the lies, I guess, because there are people out there trying to find the truth and then exposing the lies of whatever industry. So we're like, I don't believe any of you. I'm going to do my own research because I don't believe you.
Right.
I don't believe whatever you're saying.
That's a healthy, whatever you're selling, that's a very, you know, healthy perspective.
And you should do that anyway. Don't you do that when you buy a car? You might shop around. I mean, it's kind of the same idea. Like, is that really the best price? I'm not sure. Are you lying to me? Is this car really that safe?
Exactly.
No, it's not.
I hope that all of my sisters that are in their 20s, and I hope our, you know, our kids think that way, you know, because it's just going to have, we're going to have more and more information to sift through. Mm-hmm. And I hopefully nobody's buying anything unless you've been, you know, I think there's a scenario where, like we were talking about, these plant-based doctors that we trust so much and we've been following for years, then you might be a little more quick to trust someone the first time that they bring something up to you, or at least be open to it.
Right.
So there's a balance.
Yeah. Yeah, it's overwhelming.
It is. It's a long game, though.
Yeah.
We're always learning, always growing.
Totally. So you took your newfound plant-based eating passion, which, so you've been plant-based for 3 years or longer?
Yes, three. I'd say.
I think that we're about the same. I think we're on the same timeline, which is funny because I also got married in 2015.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I didn't realize that.
Yeah, September. When did y'all get married?
Cool. May.
Yeah. It was a great year. And then it was, well, it actually wasn't 2015 when I went plant-based. It was the next year, I guess. But so you took plant-based eating to a whole new level, because then you got into gardening and growing your own plants, which is, how did that start?
Yeah, so I started going to farmers markets a lot. And the last 2 years especially, I just fell in love with the routine of it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the more that I learned about specifically whole food, plant-based living, eating as many whole foods as possible. And, you know, my favorite thing to make is a big salad in that big wooden bowl in our kitchen.
Love that wooden
bowl.
Oh my gosh, y'all should see this bowl. It's so pretty.
And so having access to amazing vegetables is important when you're eating whole food plant-based. And I started to realize that, you know, although I'm so grateful that we have the convenience of running into Whole Foods whenever we need to, or any grocery store for that matter. You know, it's, I realized that there's over 20,000 species of plants.
That's insane.
On this amazing planet, wow. Edible plants, and only about 20 of them are, you know, what we buy at the grocery store. Wow. I mean, there's more available than that, but that's what, you know,
those the average the main American ones, yeah.
purchases. So you go to the farmer's market, and, you know, Charleston is, we're no New York City, but it, we still have amazing farmer's markets. And, you know, I'm thinking of one particular farmer that sources in South Carolina, North Carolina, and he has a long strip in the middle of the Marion Square Market, and he always has multiple species of mushrooms, and you know, in the summertime he'll have almost, I'd say 15 different kinds of tomatoes.
What?
And, you know, you go to the grocery store, it's always the same.
It's just the same one.
And
yeah.
then and you go to the grocery store. I want to do this summer, is buy vegetables at the grocery store and buy the same vegetable at the farmer's market and slice them open and just show the color difference.
Yeah.
Because it's incredible. Even and then of course the taste difference is you know, analogous to that color difference. Wow. And once you start eating those foods that are grown locally and, you know, delivered freshly,
more fresh, super fresh, yeah.
then you're getting more nutrient dense food. Yeah. And I think my microbiome just started to crave, you know, an amazing meal from, you know, local produce.
Wow.
So through going to the farmer's market, then I started to ask myself, like, oh, okay, maybe I could grow this or that. And, you know, usually farmers markets have, you know, purveyors selling like little potted plants and a tomato or different herbs. And I started just talking to people. So that's really where my gardening
little,
hobby came into to play.
You bought the little potted?
I did. Just, you know, starting small, I think I did get some terracotta pots to start.
Yeah.
And then ultimately got our first raised bed. And, you know.
So what was the first thing that you started growing?
Oh, gosh. So, but the first raised bed that we had so many things in it. That was my first lesson learned with gardening, was how big the plants get.
Oh.
So I think we had spinach and two different types of kale, tomatoes, cucumbers, summer squash. There's so many different things. And this, by July, it just looked like a complete jungle.
Oh my gosh.
And the bugs were, you know, and when everything's too packed in, you start attracting bugs, and it gets a little too crowded and humid in there. So, but
it's literally a plant jungle.
It was still amazing. Like I think that's the only way to, you know, everybody says, oh, I don't have a green thumb. Well,
I did.
Nobody is born with a green thumb. Like, it's just like anything else. I mean, you know,
practice.
You just, and even I've read a bunch of gardening books, and I think you just need to get some seeds or get some seedlings, put it in some soil, water it, see what happens, you know, and just keep. I took a gardening class through Cornell University and earned an organic gardening certificate, which was really fun. And but at the end of it, we really learned that journaling is so important for gardening, and because you're learning your specific environment, and you're learning with each season and each experience, and you're cataloging kind of, you know, what you're doing. And because, you know, at the end of the day, every environment's a little bit different, every seed's different,
true.
And so you just got to jump in.
Wow. Oh, I just wish I could have a magical garden just like that. You know, this is my problem is I think I'm afraid because my basil plants don't do very well. And then my mint plant doesn't do very well. But I also think that a lot of times I will just plant something and then leave it and hope that it just lives. Mm-hmm. And I'm not also, well, I am more conscious about it now as like the type of soil that I buy, which makes a huge difference from what I've learned now. Mm-hmm. So how do you choose like what kind of soil you use?
Well, so what we did in our raised beds here at the house was to, we just filled the whole thing with local topsoil, and you can buy, you should be able to buy local topsoil mm-hmm. anywhere in the country, and that just means they're literally
You're looking for organic or vegan or what? Or is that not?
It's,
or that's just normal.
You can ask the you know, the person that you're buying it from, but you know, and I did ask, and they just said, you know, this is literally, they're in the middle of nowhere and they're scooping the topsoil, you know, from some construction site that has never been touched or, you know, and then selling it back to this place. So for us living on the coast in mm-hmm. South Carolina, this is a very sandy right. product. So it would be as if you stuck a shovel in the ground right here, it's going to be very sandy. And so that's, you know, wherever you are, you should be looking for what does my local soil look like? And it might be different from, you know, mile to mile. But to get to know, is it typically very dense? Like in Kentucky, where I'm from, if you were to, you know, dig in a couple inches, it's very clay based. So it's more sticky. And, mm-hmm. you know, it's going to be almost, if you put it in your hand and you clumped it, that clump would form. Hold.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas here, the sand would just fall through your fist. And so the ultimate goal is that you want to find somewhere in between clay and sandy. Mm-hmm. And the term is loamy. So that means we want to add organic matter. And that means we're adding living, you know, nutrients to the soil mm-hmm. in the form of compost mm-hmm. and ultimately you want to have this nice mix of like you know, organic matter, a little bit of sand, you know, that's for here anyway, and so you have good drainage, something that adds the drainage. And then when you make a fist, it doesn't like fall apart, like, but it's not like Play-Doh either. 'Cause you want the water to be able to drain through, mm-hmm. but also hold. So it's kind of an art. But a lot of people, you know, if you haven't gotten started composting on your own, you may need to just buy some bagged compost or soil at the store. And that's totally cool. And there are great brands that are, you know, that are use plants only. Mm-hmm. So, for example, if you go to Lowe's, check out the brand Eco Scraps. They source from, they source from restaurants and, you know, I think big like sports stadiums and places where they can only get plant scraps, and then they turn it into compost and sell it, which is cool. And it says, you know, it says no poo right on the on the label, you know, so that that's great. Because I ultimately learned, you know, moving from learning about you know, the issues with animal agriculture in our food system, mm-hmm. and why that's a good thing, you know, why that's a good thing to not support in our food system. And now I also don't want to be a part of that in my gardening work.
Totally.
Because I did learn that, especially at some of the big box stores, a lot of the products, even organic, you know, they are sourcing the animal inputs into these products, which could be manure, blood meal, you know, things along these lines, feathers, And these are going into these products. So, you know, I'm not against using animal products ever in gardening, you know. I think everyone should, you know, make their own judgment on that. But it does make sense to me to know where it's coming from, mm-hmm. and to make sure that you're not supporting an industry that you're it's actively
yeah.
trying I mean, not to support, and that is very cruel
yeah.
and is contributing to climate change.
Absolutely. 100%. Did your course go over that, or was that kind of your own?
No, they didn't. They didn't go over.
Did they go over organic, or what was, or it was just?
Yes. Yeah. It was the whole course was focused on organic, which mm-hmm. you know, in simple terms, just meant that we're talking about not using chemicals for your nutrition, mm-hmm. you know, and moving into using compost and organic matter. Mm-hmm. For your nutrition.
Yeah. So from what there are so many reasons why you should choose organic. One being, at least this is how I understand it, is that if you use conventional chemical fertilizers, so they're sprayed on, you know, the roots and the leaves, it is creating less phytochemicals in the plants. And so phytochemicals are a plant's natural healthy defense system that keeps away pest and disease, but it also is like an essential part of our human diet. And so when you have conventional produce, the phytochemicals are, I don't know if they're not there, but they're barely existent compared to how they would be in a plant that's organic.
Right, exactly. Yeah. It's that's really why gardening, it's just like plant-based nutrition. The more you get into it, the more you realize like how exciting it is on so many levels. But gardening, you know, it started out as kind of something fun and creative outlet, and oh, cool, I'm, you know, it's fun to see something grow from seed.
And to be outside, but
ultimately then you get into it and you realize this is a philosophical way mm-hmm. of living that deeply, you know, that I feel deeply connected to. And, you know, I'm not living off, I live in a, you know, a neighborhood, you know, in very close to a city. So I'm not living off the land or anything like that. But my dream is to have a farm one day
and
do that. So, but I hope that my vision for saving the planet at this moment is that it is for everyone to, you know, no matter where you live, to grow something, no matter how small. But you know, even better, have a garden.
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if everyone had a garden.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's just kind of going back to our past, you know. I mean, if you think about like my grandmother had a garden, I think both of my grandmothers had a garden. I know that one of them, I remember her garden very vividly because she always had strawberries and blueberries and green beans and black eyed peas and like, I mean, I can't even explain the flavor. I remember the last time, and she would freeze a lot of them, you know? And I remember, I was obsessed with black-eyed peas, like her black-eyed peas. I've never had black-eyed peas like that in my whole life, and I never will again because they were hers. And she knew exactly how to grow them, and they loved their life, whatever. And I remember having the last bag of black-eyed peas and we talked about that as we were eating there, and they were like, this is the last bag. It was like, I know, it was like this monumental, like, you know, day that it was like the last time we had them. But I just feel like we have gotten so disconnected from being connected to the earth in general. And we humans have kind of put ourselves above nature, even though we actually are part of nature. You know, we are essentially animals. whether people want to believe it or not. And we're addicted to technology, and I'm obviously guilty of it. It's not that I'm not, I mean, we're talking on a podcast right now, so this is technology, but there is a level that, you know, you get over, and it's just, losing that connection. So I feel like gardening is a really great way to tap back into Mother Earth, you know?
Yes, absolutely. It's funny how we've come, you know, thank God for technology, as you mentioned.
Yeah,
and,
totally.
And there's...
It's changed our lives.
It's changed our lives.
But part of it is a kind of a bad thing. I mean, it's got its pros and its cons.
Right. Now we're working to undo some of the damage. And I think more and more people, including myself, are realizing that we need to live in a way that, you know, technology is so new. And I mean, we're in this like kind of experimental phase. And when I say technology, I'm really thinking about, you know, this computer and phone in front of me that, how I navigate my day, like the internet and social media. And
social
like,
media, I think, is the worst.
It's so we're in this giant experiment where we're right now, it's so easy to be extremely addicted to an overload of information
and get sucked in
and not go outside once throughout the day. And we've got to figure out how to find balance and gain control back in our lives and put nature first, technology second. I think Zach Bush talks a lot about this, and when you were talking about your grandmother's garden, and just makes me think about his work and how, like, you know, he's working. He has a nonprofit called Farmers Footprints.
I know. I need to. I think he's doing a documentary with that too, right?
Yes, and I think haven't watched. I don't know if it's out yet.
I know. I think it is. We should watch it.
It's, you know, I just think that's an incredible cause to focus on right now is helping, helping individual households have gardens. And then when you have a garden, you realize the value in eating your own produce and the health benefits and, so many other benefits.
And then, mentally, then like the stress, you know, the stress reliever for sure.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, it's just endless. And then, and so that is an amazing cause. And then a step above that, you know, considering that, you know, our market driven society is not going anywhere anytime soon. I mean, you and I contribute to it every day.
I know.
We grocery shop and so contributing to how our farmers are actually growing this food and trying to help support farmers that support what's called regenerative agriculture.
That's what I was gonna
do. And you know, which, you know, ultimately means that we're rebuilding our soil as opposed to depleting it, which is what has happened over the last many decades using you know, traditional agriculture or chemical agriculture.
Yeah. And then this is why, you know, the degradation of our soil contributes to why a conventional tomato or whatnot will have a much lesser nutritional content than an organic one. So like they seemingly look the same on the outside, right? But if you look at the inside, it's like a fraction of what.
Right, it's like a light pink versus a deep, beautiful ruby red, you know?
Yeah, because this is, you know, the soil is, it kind of has its own microbiome, right? Like just kind of like your gut does.
Yes, exactly.
And so, and it makes sense, obviously, if you're spraying chemicals on it, that microbiome is going to be, you know, destroyed. Exactly. And that's where all of the minerals come from, is
yes, and then when you destroy the microbiome of the soil in order to grow the plant, you need to then fertilize it with chemicals again.
Oh,
and you know, that's where the NPK, like, you know, you go to a gardening store and, you know, you see, or Lowe's or wherever, and, you know, you see these kind of chemical breakdowns of you know, of what you're
trying to add back,
what you're buying. Yeah, yeah.
What is an MPK?
Nitrogen, potassium. Yeah, yeah. I don't know what the K is. I can't remember. These are all things that if, like, if you're eating a whole food plant-based diet and you're getting a ton of amazing, beautiful vegetables in your body, like, you don't need to think about how much protein, carbohydrate, or fat you're getting, you know, which was an obsession for so long with dieting, especially the protein.
Still is for some.
Still is.
And I have a really good blog post about that.
Yes.
If you're confused about protein.
Good plug. And yeah, so it's the same with gardening. It's like, you don't need to think. I mean, I'm not an expert. I've taken a few classes and I'm super passionate about it. But, you know, this isn't something that I've been, I'm no farmer for sure. But what I,
but
what
you're
I
not
do
a novice
know,
either, either. You are more advanced than that.
Well, thank you. But what I do know is that my garden is growing extremely well, and I'm putting plant-based nutrition, you know, via compost onto it, and it's feeding the plants. And so plants are no different than us. They just need a variety of nutrition sources, and they're going to do fine on their own.
Wow.
You know, and they need sunlight and water, of course, and all these things. So it's just, we don't need to make it rocket science. Like, you know, I don't think anyone I would guess that someone in, you know, the 1800s wasn't sitting there figuring out how much nitrogen was in their soil. Like, they just.
Probably not.
They just understood the cycle of, you know, rebuilding the soil.
Yeah.
You know, and reusing their waste, which is,
I mean, they were doing regenerative agriculture. I mean, we've been doing it for thousands of years, and we've just kind of lost our way.
Exactly.
Because of Monsanto. Confusing everyone.
Exactly.
But that could be a whole nother podcast. So I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole right now. Yeah.
Didn't they get purchased by
Bayer? I know. Bayer, worst, most evil corporations in the world have now combined.
I'm not up to speed on that news.
I follow it. But I think, like you said earlier, you know, with the transparency and the different generations, I think the people are just over them. And at this point, there is nothing they can say for a lot of people. There's nothing they can say or do that I would ever be like, oh, you know, I forgive you for all of your evil, you know, evil ways for the last several decades, you know. And I'm certainly not the only one who feels that way. So, you know, they can try to do enough, like, all of this changing their name. Because I think they actually, Monsanto changed their name. Well, so they were bought by Bayer, and then they also have a new name for that division, like for the Roundup and stuff. I can't remember what they've called it.
Oh, right. It's
what
like
is it called? It's very patriotic somehow. Yes, yeah.
check out Ritual's interview with Dr. Zach Bush. You were recorded in January, because that's where they go over this. And
yeah, there's two.
It's some creepy name.
It is some creepy name, but it's trying it's freedom something. It's definitely trying to tug on, you know, Americans, I don't know, passion for America. Yeah. Whatever you call that, I don't know. But it doesn't fool me, so hopefully it doesn't fool you. But that podcast, yeah, is absolutely one of my favorite. I could listen to that podcast like every day. Mm-hmm. I kind of want to, just so I can be as, I don't know, well versed as he is. But he's like light years above where I'll ever be.
That's not true.
Come on, he's triple board certified. He's like one of the only triple board certified. Like, there's only a few in America, and he is just, he's brilliant to listen to. And that is definitely one of the best podcast interviews I've ever listened to. But anyways, so what was your, I'm very intrigued by, obviously, your gardening. Anyways, because I would like to be more advanced in my gardening, and I want to have Like, I just have potted plants now, which is a great, like you said, that's a great way to start, is to do mm-hmm. potted plants. But I would like to have, like, a small, maybe, like, window box kind of size thing, right. You know? What other tips do you have for, like, starting out? Just start small, yeah.
Yes, a window box is a great idea. We have these coconut husk baskets that you can get you can get those at any local garden store, but it's basically like a wire basket, and then it has I believe it's coconut husk in it, but it has great drainage, and then just go buy some eco scraps from Lowe's, and they sell potting soil, which has a nice mix of, I think it has some like pine bark in it and things that would help create more drainage than just their compost. Mm-hmm. But they also sell compost only, which you could top raised beds with and that kind of thing. But if you're using pots or baskets, you might want to buy the potting soil fill it up with your potting soil, and then stick your seeds in there and your seedlings, and water those guys, and then also try to compost at home if you can.
Yeah.
And then use that finished compost to dress your plants whenever it's ready.
What do you mean dress them?
Or
Sprinkle, dust it on.
Dust it. Sprinkle on top. Yeah,
that's what it's called, dressing them.
Well, I don't know if that's
gardening.
I'm going to
dress my plants. I like it. It sounds
that's
cute.
That's a gardening term.
I like it. You dress them up with their nice compost.
Feed them. So, I think one reason that, you say your basil plant dies, things die, and I'm looking at my house plants right now.
I'm just going to say.
You don't feed them.
That's probably true. Also, I've never gotten them as a seed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm buying them, and they might already not be, I mean, they look good when they're at the store, but I don't know where they've been,
Exactly. That's
I don't know their
huge
story.
For me is, and if you're in the South, check out sowtrueseed.com. Mm-hmm. They're based in Asheville, and they source their seed from organic farmers and gardeners in the Southeast. And
they have heirloom ones too. Yeah, a bunch of heirloom stuff.
Heirloom is so cool, and
are those all seeds right there?
Yes, they are.
She has like a ton of seeds.
Those are so true seed packets. So
I bought some of those, and I still haven't planted them because I'm paranoid.
We'll try it because in my experience, growing from seed produces a much stronger plant.
That makes sense.
It takes longer. It takes more patience, which is part of the fun of gardening, is remembering patience it grows you get a much stronger plant in the end.
Okay.
That's what and I mean. Also try another really cheap solution is called a grow bag, and you can just get on Amazon, search grow bag, and it's like I think you can do a natural fabric or maybe a nylon material, but it's basically like, it looks like a reusable grocery bag that's kind of maybe has some support in it, and fill that up with your soil and your compost, and you can grow potatoes in it, as long as you have 12 inches for some of your deeper rooting plants. Then give that a try, because that pots can be expensive. You can I love terracotta pots, and they'll last forever, right. And they hold water really well, and they're very classic looking.
Mm-hmm.
But I think they might cost 30 or 40 or 50 bucks for a nice one. And a grow bag, you could buy for $10 on Amazon, or
maybe
a few of them.
They don't weigh as much either,
Right,
exactly.
Because
those pots weigh a lot. They're super heavy once you get soil on them,
mm-hmm.
if you want to move them around.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. What's your favorite vegetable to grow, to eat, that you love to eat the most?
Vegetable?
Spinach?
I would definitely say kale. Greens. Because we eat greens every day. So my favorite routine is to go out in the morning and snip some.
This sounds so romantic. I just want to do this.
With your bare feet.
I know. And,
you know.
In your pajamas and your
bathroom. Say hello to the birds. And,
I know.
You know,
oh my
snip
gosh.
Some.
Like Snow White or something. Hello, friends.
And then you
Good
step,
morning.
You like step in a fire ant.
Oh. And then you're no longer Snow White. You're cussing and it's not very Disney-like.
But snipping some kale or spinach and then bring it inside and rinsing it off and throwing it in the BlendTec mm-hmm. or Vitamix, whichever team you're on, and making my morning smoothie is just it's so fun. Or a salad, but I think herbs, I really want to focus on herbs this year because I buy those all the time. I should. I feel
they
so guilty because I buy
too,
them
and so annoying
during the winter. And mm-hmm. you should be able to grow them all year round mm-hmm. here. I just haven't made it a priority. But yeah, they come in plastic.
I hate it.
And it's the cheapest thing, the easiest thing to grow, but it's the most expensive at the store.
Oh, for sure. Just like the tiniest little thing of mint that I bought recently. I mean, that was like $3 or $4.
Right.
And it goes bad. You know, you use it one, like,
right.
You might use it for one drink or for one smoothie or whatever. And then in 3 days, the rest of it is totally brown. I don't know how much mint and basil I have wasted because I bought it at the store.
Right.
It's nauseating. Right. Well, and then the plastic that it came in, which is so annoying that you can't buy those things just like you buy spinach, which is just, you know, free. I mean, mm-hmm. I don't put it in a bag when I go. I have my own little eco-friendly bags, so, ugh.
Right. I have been wrapping my greens and herbs in cloth, in a napkin, you know, something like a cloth napkin, and putting it in the fridge, and it keeps it.
Oh,
so
nice.
You're keeping it dry, and and the kale and herbs and anything else has been lasting longer. So
that's awesome. I'll try that. I've tried with like cilantro and things like that. I can put it in a mason jar and put water in it.
Mm-hmm.
And basically like it's a bouquet of flowers and it stays longer.
Yeah.
Yes.
Nice.
I haven't tried that with mint though. I know it looks so pretty. It's like a just bouquet of greens, you know, which I love. So I guess we'll wrap this up now so I can get home before the storm really starts.
Okay. Well, thanks for having me.
I don't know. So what are you working? What are you working on now? What's happening?
Yes. So I am.
Other than a bun in the oven.
Yes. I'm working on giving birth to a baby soon. So I'm 9 months pregnant.
So it could be right now, but it looks like it's not going to be because we're almost done. But
yes, that would have been very interesting.
It would have been
episode.
Great. Most downloaded.
Right. Yes. So baby's coming any day now, which is very exciting. Can't wait to introduce him. It's a boy to gardening and I hope that he loves being in the kitchen. And it's going to be so much fun. And other than that, I also started a podcast, which has been so rewarding and so much fun. I know you're going to love it as well.
Yay.
And have been doing a few interviews for that. And that's my main priority right now.
Nice.
I have found it to be an amazing medium so far for reaching people in our community in a meaningful way very quickly, because I think everyone is just appreciates, you know, being a part of a meaningful conversation.
Yeah.
You know, as opposed to writing a blog post.
Absolutely.
You know, which is great too.
This is so much
but
more
when you
personal.
Only have so much time,
I know.
You know, because you and I both also have day jobs,
mm-hmm.
that, you know, it's great to figure out where to best spend that time. So podcasting has been amazing so far. And I've also been experimenting with putting together raised beds for people in the community.
Nice.
So if anyone hasn't heard of Jessica Murnan's podcast, One Part Plant, check it out. But she lives here in Charleston. And she's a new friend, and my husband Ben put together a raised bed for her.
Nice.
And did a beautiful job. And so, you know, we're exploring what it might look like to help more people, you know, have gardens, because that's the ultimate dream. And you know, whether you know, the business side of it is really irrelevant at this point. It's just kind of fun to think about how we can serve that need. So if you're interested in having a raised bed, follow me on Instagram and send me a direct message. And I'd love to chat with you about it, because it's really a game changer.
Yeah.
So other than that, I'll just keep plugging along with the podcast. And
yeah.
So lots of fun things going on.
Cool. So your Instagram is at Kind Kitchen with no E on the kitchen.
Right.
Which is very adorable and romantic with that E, I think. And then also you have a website where you can directly find your podcast from right. there. Or you can find them on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, all those things.
Yes.
And yeah, until next time.
Until next time.
Peace and plants.
Peace and plants.
Wasn't that interview so great? Maggie is so inspiring, and I am so thankful to be able to call her one of my closest friends. She truly is the embodiment of a person trying to live their life as compassionately and as kind as possible. And shouldn't that be something that we're all aspiring to be a little bit more of? Kinder to ourselves, kinder to other humans, animals, the planet. I think the Earth can definitely use more of that. So thank you so much for tuning in to my first episode of the Refined Hippie Podcast. I am extremely excited to be sharing this journey with you and to see where it goes. You can also check out my Instagram at The Refined Hippie or my website, therefinedhippie.com, to get recipes, tips, recommendations on living a more holistic life. So until next time, my friends, peace and plants.